military-industrial complex. The very thing Eisenhower warned us about, the very thing that Kennedy tried to get rid of. Here it is, folks, right in your face. It's running this country, it's running the world, and it's running us into the ground. Before the break, by the way, we do have Toby waiting on the line in Florida. Appreciate your holding there just for a few more minutes. I just wanted to have Professor Fetzer finish the point he was making about Lansky.
Oh, I was actually talking about a fellow whose name is Chauncey Holt, who is was photographed in Dealey Plaza as the third of the three tramps. He worked for the CIA as a contract agent because of his talent for counterfeiting and forging. He was actually involved in preparing 15 sets of forged Secret Service credentials for use in and around Dealey Plaza during the assassination. He told me that he thought it was going to be some event to draw attention to our policy toward Cuba. He claimed he didn't know it was going to be an actual assassination, but Chauncey was a pretty shrewd character, and I'd be very surprised if he didn't suspect that there was more to it than that. In any case, he worked at an outfit called the Los Angeles Stamp and Stationery Store, which was a CIA proprietary, pointing out to me how the CIA has many assets with these innocuous-sounding names. Yeah. It was like a five-story building. On the first three floors, there was a legitimate business, and then the CIA had its documents section at the top, and it was here that the Lee Oswald, Alec Heidel ID, for example, were created for his use in New Orleans. But the bottom three floors, Charlie, were the legitimate business of manufacturing police and sheriff department badges and IDs, so that actually if the CIA needed a badge or whatnot, they wouldn't just put together a phony one. They could give you a real one.
Wow. What a scam. Now, the hobos there, since we're talking about that, what do you think of this E. Howard Hunt thing? Apparently he was one of them.
Well, now that's very interesting, because that's one area where St. John was not so definitive in what he had to say. He said he thought the third tramp resembled his father. There's been a lot of debate about it. There is a book called Coup d'etat in America that suggests, using overlays, that there's a resemblance between E. Howard Hunt and the third tramp. But I've investigated this extensively. I had a symposium, in fact, at a national conference on JFK around 1998, in which I brought family members of Chauncey to Dallas. His wife, his daughter, and with lots of photographs from their family album and creating overlays, I think we established the case that Chauncey, who always had claimed to be the third of the three tramps, was indeed the third of the three tramps. That was an opinion, by the way, that was formed early on by Lois Gibson, who was a forensic artist for the Houston Police Department. She had identified the three tramps respectively as Charles Rogers, whom Chauncey knew as Richard Montoya, Charles Harrelson, the tallest of the three, who happens to be the father of Woody Harrelson, and Chauncey Holt. Now, I'm very confident with those identifications. The Harrelson figure has sometimes been supposed to be Frank Sturgis, but it's quite clear, right, I think, that in fact this isn't Sturgis. Now, to say that Sturgis and Hunt were not two of the three tramps is not to deny that Sturgis and Hunt almost certainly were in Dealey Plaza and involved, yeah, in the assassination. I even am willing to conjecture that Sturgis was among the shooters.
Well, either way, we're dealing with CIA ops. What do you think that their function really was? Was it just a distraction, or...?
Oh, no. Among the shooters, you had a mix here of shooters. In fact, I'm inclined to conjecture that each of the different units that were involved in the assassination and setting them up and framing Oswald and all that, which included the Dallas police, the Dallas sheriff's office, the military, the CIA, and the mafia, I believe each of them contributed a shooter. In fact, we've determined Jack was hit four different times. He was hit in the throat from in front. He was hit in the back about 5.5 inches below the collar, just to the right of the spinal column from behind. That was a shallow shot, only went in about as far as the second knuckle on your little finger. It was that wound whose description was altered at the instruction of Gerald Ford, from his uppermost back, which was already an exaggeration, to the base of the back of the neck, to provide a basis for the so-called magic bullet theory. But then he was also shot twice from, you know, he was shot in the right temple, as I mentioned before, and in the back of the head. Then Big John Connolly was hit anywhere from 1 to 3 times. Connolly was hit as he turned. He said how he went to his right to see what was going on, then turned back to his left when he felt this doubling up in his chest. That was a shot from the side. That appears to have been fired from the opposite side of the book depository from Oswald was alleged to have been located. And then we had, of course, three shots that missed. So we have eight, nine, or ten shots from what turned out to be different locations.
The magic bullet, defying the laws of physics. But that shouldn't bother us. We just need to accept it, because that's what happened, right? Folks, we'll be right back. Toby, thanks for your patience. Stick with us. We'll take you right after the break.
Hi, Steve Shank, Fearless Task Force. Sure, you've got a mortgage and credit cards. Your debt creation is probably the smartest thing you've ever done. How would it be to find $75,000, $150,000, $200,000 or more you never knew you had? Now the task force has strategies to make these debts into virtual savings accounts. Ben Franklin said, a penny saved is a penny earned. By doing nothing more than you're doing right now, because you've used your credit, the right strategies can make the debt part of your financial life the smartest thing you've ever done. Oh, by the way, your strategies cost you nothing out of pocket. Go ahead and check out the debt elimination scams if you'd like to. You wouldn't take money from a loan shark, so you may not want to give your money to a debt shark. For an understanding of what a financial genius you truly are, call 800-409-5633. On the web, mydebtfreepath.com. 800-409-5633.
Sit back, relax, and enjoy a vacation to the beautiful Ozark Mountains. Howard Creek Resort is nestled conveniently between the cities of Bull Shoals and Mountain Home on Bull Shoals Lake in the natural state of Arkansas. Howard Creek Resort offers easy access to excellent fishing and water recreation of all types. The excitement of nearby Branson music shows and Silver Dollar City is accented perfectly by the many attractions located here in the heart of the Ozarks. Horseback riding, water skiing, scuba diving, hiking, caves, and rock climbing are just a few of the many activities that are available to do in our area. Howard Creek Resorts offers it all. Whether you're staying for the weekend or for a month, Howard Creek Resorts is the place to be, an excellent place to stay, and a valued traditional family vacation resort. Visit our website at www.howardcreek.com or call 1-877-253-7690. Come visit us for a lifetime of memories.
Are you paying exorbitant amounts of interest to your mortgage lender? We as Americans have been led down a path of paying excessive amounts of interest to the lending institution.
In 1963, we had the magic bullet. In 2001, we had the magic Muslims slamming planes into buildings and then walking around and talking about it the next day. It's amazing. Wow, I'm impressed. Truth is stranger than fiction. Hey, we got Toby waiting on the line in Florida. You with us, Tob?
Here today.
Yeah, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Mr. Fetzer, are you familiar with William Cooper, Bill Cooper?
Yes.
Okay, have you pretty much gone through most of his materials, the videotapes and stuff?
Well, I integrated his video and discussed it in a 4.5-hour documentary I produced in 1994 entitled JFK, The Assassination, The Cover-Up, and Beyond.
Okay, well, then I was just wondering, because I hadn't heard it mentioned today, but there was, I don't know what it was called, but it was like Who Really Killed JFK by Bill Cooper, and it was pretty much an in-depth analysis of the Zapruder film, and kind of focuses on this one particular section. You know, William Greer, that was the chauffeur, right, or the driver?
He was a driver, yeah.
Okay, and he was connected how politically? He was with the chauffeur of the Henry Cabot Lodge family or something?
But he might have been. He was the oldest member of the Secret Service detail. He was, I think, an Irish Protestant, actually. And but go ahead.
There was a section of the Zapruder film at the point where, you know, Kennedy first sustained the massive head wound that kind of kicked his head back. But he slows it down, and you see on the, I guess it's in the upper right-hand corner. It's pretty plain. The driver, Greer, actually makes a motion where he turns and his left hand crosses his chest and comes around. His whole body turns, and then you see this white, you know, tubular-looking thing, and then bam, that, and then he turns.
Like he's the shooter?
Yeah. Did you see that?
I'm glad to talk about it. I mean, this is the point that why I incorporate what's known as the Cooper tape into my own discussion. Cooper suggests that William Greer may have actually shot Jack Kennedy. Visually, there is some image there that gives rise to that conjecture. I know members of the research community who strongly believe that to this day. My own opinion is that while there is some circumstantial evidence that tends to support it, for example, Mary Moorman, who was staying on the grass opposite the grassy knoll and then took a couple of very important photographs, including one Polaroid, just as Jack is having his brains blown out, said that she thought some of the shots, or at least one of the shots, came from inside the limousine. Clint Hill, who actually rushed up from the Secret Service Cadillac following the presidential limousine, said that the last shot sounded different than the rest. It sounded like a revolver impacting with something hard. That's consistent with Cooper's thesis. On the other hand, we have an analysis of the shooting that doesn't require that Cooper have that Greer have made that shot, and it's very difficult to imagine that it came across the way it's been suggested. Down is that because the film has been so massively edited that we actually cannot say whether or not this did happen. It's certainly a tantalizing conjecture. It's not impossible.
An objection I would raise, though, would be Jackie herself. You know, would they be willing to take a chance like that? I mean, she certainly would have known that shot was very close.
Oh, I think that's a reasonable point, Charlie. Yeah, I think, and of course, obviously, so would have Nellie and John Connolly been aware of exactly what went on.
Yeah.
But,
Wasn't that weapon supposed to be that CIA assassination, you know, like built for quiet and all that kind of stuff? I mean, there was a congressional hearing before all this thing happened, and the CIA did admit that they had those kind of weapons. So would that alter the perceptions of the people right there in the immediate vicinity? Possibly, I don't know.
Well, my opinion is that we can't answer the question, and that the medical evidence doesn't require it, but it's not impossible. It looks less likely in my judgment than alternative scenarios. I mean, we're really talking about the shot that hit Jack in the right temple, which appears to have come from the right front, because it clearly wasn't the shot to the throat, and those are the only two shots from in front. My belief is that that shot to the right temple did not come from the vicinity between the two, the driver, William Greer and Roy Kellerman. But I've got to say, I mean, you know, that you bring this up is entirely appropriate because it's been one of the most contentious or disputed issues in the history of JFK research.
Thank you.
Bye. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Yeah, that is an interesting point. I've been hearing that discussed quite a bit lately, and I was actually going to ask you about that later. I was curious to get your opinion on that. We have another caller, John in New York. Welcome to the show, John.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I got a couple of strange questions, I guess. Number one, as Greg Szymanski had a speaking that this was all a made-up movie and that it really didn't take place.
What's that?
And that JFK actually retired in Poland and Greece.
No, I'm sorry, but his brains were splattered all over the back of the limousine.
Okay.
I hadn't heard that one.
Okay, well, you know what?
That's something else they cleaned up.
That was
in the great Zapruder film hoax. We talk about a dozen different lines of proof that lead to the same conclusion about the alteration of the film, the recreation of the film. And one of the lines of evidence is that as Vincent Palomara, who's a leading expert on the Secret Service in the world today, discovered, several of the Secret Service agents reported being nauseated, actually getting physically ill, when they viewed the limousine back in Washington and saw the brains of the president splattered all over the back of the trunk.
Well, the other thing...
Go ahead. No.
That would explain watching the thing down. Yeah, go ahead, John.
The the other thing was is just common sense tells you, you know, if gunfire is going on, you hit the floor, and yet Mrs. Kennedy didn't hit the floor. Jackie got out on the back and was actually going on a moving car. And the, you know, I mean, that just it shows that she knew she was in danger and she was getting away from, I'm assuming, the driver and the bad situation. She didn't know where to go, but the number one thing would have been hit the floor, and she didn't hit the floor. She was like, wow.
No, I believe she said that she was trying to grab parts of the brain and, like, put them back in
that's what you're reporting is just a misinterpretation. See, now, look, most of these weapons were silenced. I think that only one of them was probably not silenced. That's from the book, from the Dow Tech building, the second floor. There was a closet for a uranium mining operation that was a CIA asset. And there appeared to have been three shots fired from there, one of which hit Jack in the back of the head, one of which missed and injured the distant bystander, James Tague, a third of which missed and hit the chrome strip over the windshield, which would be consistent with a Mannlicher Carcano. I believe that was a Mannlicher Carcano, and it was being used deliberately to create the idea of three shots coming from the book depository where Oswald was located, because the acoustics of the building would make it very difficult to discern the difference. That's a point to which we could return subsequently, but the film JFK actually turns out to be very accurate and complete in relation to its depiction of the events in Dealey Plaza, except it's too simple by half, because instead of there being just three shooters, there actually turned out to have been six.
Well, put down that the I did see the hear the program by Greg Szymanski about it being a hoax, and I'll be honest with you, it was quite convincing. The other long, strange thought here is if you look at what's happened over on research, we've had in 1931, you had Mr. Faraday talking about time, space, and energy. You have the UFO patent is 6960975. You have a situation like the Philadelphia Project where they could make the ship disappear and guys would come back through the bulkheads and stuff. And so do we have invisibility? Because when Mr. Kennedy was on the plane, also, that 6960975 UFO mechanism transverses time. And when his body was on the plane, all of a sudden he had, like, surgery on the forehead, and his brains were tapped and whatnot. And so did somebody freeze time, and did they have disappearance? Or do we have something in that mechanism that might have taken place there that we are just beyond measure of understanding?
No, let me go back to the point about Jackie, because I actually didn't complete my answer to your question, your previous question. Then I'll address this
I'm sorry.
Jackie was actually crawling out the back after a big chunk of Jack's skull and brains, which he held in her hand all the way to Parkland Hospital. And then in what has to be the most poignant moment in the history of the assassination, she turned to the anesthesiologist Pepper Jenkins, extended her hand, and asked if this will help. I mean, Jackie knew a lot about art and culture and literature and languages, but she knew nothing about neurology or brain surgery, and of course, it couldn't help, but she had held that all the way in her hand. So she in fact, wasn't trying to escape or get away from the shooters, even though that's often portrayed that way. She was actually going after a chunk of her husband's skull and brains. Now,
right.
The business about surgery to the skull emerged in research of David Lifton when a report came from one of the pathologists at Bethesda Hospital, who said that there was evidence of surgery to the skull when they were examining Jack's cranium during the preliminary stages of the autopsy. Now, there may have been such at Walter Reed in order to make sure they had all of the metallic fragments. So I think that's actually consistent with the body having been transported, as he has surmised, by helicopter to Walter Reed to remove the bullet fragments, and then this preliminary craniotomy, I think it's called, removal of the top of the skull could have taken place in order to remove further bullet fragments. But actually the rest of a good part of the brain, because Paul O'Connor, who actually took the body out, said that there was, you know, the whole brain was gone. So there is a lot of issue here about the brain.
Another incredible scandal, too, was the fact that the bullet, the magic bullet that miraculously just dropped out of the, you know, it's like finding that passport miraculously a couple blocks from the North Tower. But the bullet was almost in pristine condition. There was more metal fragments found in Connolly's wrist than what was missing from the entire bullet, folks.
You're right,
this is
on,
just
Charlie.
Crazy stuff. We'll be, thanks for the call. We'll be right back, folks. Stick with us.
Are you paying exorbitant amounts of interest to your mortgage lender? We as Americans have been led down a path of paying excessive amounts of interest to the lending institutions. Stop paying tens of thousands of dollars in mortgage interest and start saving. Our financial experts have spent 2 years and about $2 million on a revolutionary interest reduction solution that will show you how to pay off 100% of your mortgage and other debt in as little as 8 to 11 years with no change to your current lifestyle or spending habits. No increase to your monthly mortgage payments, no refinancing, and no out-of-pocket expense. That's right. Take 19 to 22 years off your 30-year mortgage. This is not a bi-weekly payment program or a debt roll-down program. It's much more. Sound too good to be true? Find out just how good. Visit interestreductionsolutions.com or call 1-800-281-5094. That's 1-800-281-5094. Ask about our free DVD and financial analysis report.
Businesses and their employees are facing constant increases in group medical insurance premiums. Employees are shouldering more of the burden themselves. Core Documents, the nation's primary source for affordable medical plan documents, has the answer. A health reimbursement arrangement, or HRA. Business owners, managers, find out now how your company can utilize a much higher deductible health insurance policy and establish an HRA to fund low deductibles for your employees. And employees, tell the boss to visit coredocuments.com now. This new HRA plan can save you thousands of dollars.
Employers all over the country are discovering how to roll back insurance costs using Core Documents' HRA concept. Core Documents is the nation's primary source for affordable plan documents required by the IRS and Department of Labor for Section 125 and HRA plans. Use your insurance agent and let Core Documents help you with plan design. Do a Google search for Core Documents or see us at coredocuments.com. That's Core, C-O-R-E, documents, plural, .com.
World War III? Rising fuel prices? Financial collapse? Trucker strike? North American Union? Our world has become a very fragile place, and we need to be prudent and plan ahead. Don't wait for an impending crisis to become reality. Then it will be too late. Stoves and More wants to help give you freedom from the systems of the world. If the grid is down and fossil fuels are not available to you, how would you heat your home, cook your food, and heat your water? People, we need to be more independent and able to take care of ourselves in a natural disaster, political crisis, or financial crisis. Stoves and More is a dealer for all Amish-built wood cook stoves that will give you the independence you need to cook and bake your food, dry fruits and vegetables, heat your whole house water system, and heat your home. With the right application, you'll be able to use these stoves all year long, not just during the winter months. At Stoves and More, we have the perfect products to complete your preparations. Stoves and More offers the best selection at the lowest prices on the web, so visit us at stovesandmoreonline.com. Food, water, and a wood cook stove are keys to your survival in a crisis. Take action.
Since 1988, Herbal Healer Academy has been the global supplier of the finest natural medicines. We specialize in keeping you alive and healthy. We provide outstanding products like ECX, colloidal silver, olive leaf extract, oregano oil, and hundreds of herbals, oils, books, and educational materials. We have homeopathic detox solutions for chemtrails, radiation, MSG, and aspartame poisoning. We also train naturopathic healers via correspondence education. Why wait any longer? Go ahead and do it today. Sign up on the web and receive our new 120-page catalog and a current Herbal Healer newsletter free. Simply log on to herbalhealer.com and check out the online member testimonials and our hundreds of exceptional products. That's herbalhealer.com, your website for safe, effective, natural alternatives and education. That's herbalhealer.com.
All right, folks, we're back. Professor James Fetzer talking about the Kennedy assassination. Dr. Fetzer, what do you think of the that famous photo? It was on the cover of Time or Life magazine, you know, the backyard photo. There's Oswald holding the murder weapon, and you've got some serious discrepancies there with shadow angles and... You know the one I'm talking about?
Yeah, of course, Charlie. I mean, that was the photo that was used to convict him in the minds of most Americans. It appeared on the cover of Life, as you observe. He's wearing a pistol belt and a revolver with which he's alleged to have killed a police officer, J.D. Tippit. He's holding the Mannlicher Carcano with which he's alleged to have killed the president. And he's holding two communist newspapers, The Worker and The Militant. There's been a lot of suspicion about the shadows and so forth. There appears to be an insert line. The chin is a block chin. Oswald had a pointed chin with a cleft. There's no pointed chin, no cleft. So it's pretty clear there's something wrong here. Oswald himself said that this was his face pasted on somebody else's body and that it would eventually be possible to prove it. Indeed, it turns out that there were several variations on this this stance in the backyard, which had the same face exactly on the several different poses, but there are a whole lot of absurdities connected with this. One is that the Mandekar Carcano he was alleged to have used to kill the president only has a muzzle velocity of 2,000 feet per second. Now, according to the Warren Commission report, the autopsy reports and all that, Jack was killed by the impact of high-velocity bullets. But 2,000 feet per second doesn't qualify a weapon as high velocity. They need to be closer to 3,000, which means a Mannlicher Carcano isn't a high-velocity weapon and cannot have fired the bullets that killed the president. This is the simplest possible exoneration of Lee Oswald you could have, and yet the government has steadfastly ignored this contradiction in its own evidence. Another is that the revolver he's using that with which he's alleged to have killed Officer Tippett is contradicted by the evidence at the scene of the crime where four shell casings were observed of two different manufacturers that had been ejected automatically, which a revolver does not do. And it's
right.
simply absurd to imagine that Lee Oswald would have shot this police officer three times in the torso and then come over and finished him off with a shot to his right temple, interestingly the same location as Jack's wound there, and then opened the chamber to his revolver and taken out the shell casings. A woman, Aquila Clemens, sitting across the street said that two men had killed Tippett, which is consistent with the two manufacturers of shell casings. Neither of them resembled Oswald. And this whole thing appears to have been a charade to blame him for the shooting of a police officer, which he had nothing to do with. We ultimately, by the way, have been able to prove by a whole nother method that the photograph has been faked. Jack White, the legendary photo analyst I referred to before, discovered that, of course, those communist newspapers have known dimensions and therefore can function as an internal ruler. Oswald was about 5'10" tall. If you use the known dimensions of the newspaper and lay it off from the bottom of the sole of his shoe to the top of his head, turns out the individual in the photograph is too short to be Lou Oswald. He's only about 5'6", which means either that they use someone who is too short, or when they put the newspapers into the photograph, they made them too large, which is the more probable explanation. But in either case, we have conclusive evidence that that photograph was faked.
Any idea why? Well, I mean, yeah, look at the fake photos of the hijackers from Dulles. One of them is Salem El Hamzi. They name him, and yet the same FBI that names this guy admitted 10 days after the attacks to the BBC that he was alive and they got some of the names wrong.
Oh, it's ridiculous, Charlie. We have no evidence that any of the hijackers were actually on any of those planes. The original
right.
flight manifest released by CNN the day of the event doesn't show any Arab names on any of those manifests. Even in those days, you had to show a photo ID to gain access to a plane. We don't even have their tickets. I mean, it raises a question. Did Osama bin Laden charge them to his MasterCard from his cave in Afghanistan?
You know, with the multiplied billions of dollars our intelligence agencies get, you think they could come up with something better than this. I mean, this is like some low-rated Hollywood B-rated film, you know.
A lot of shoddy things were being used to manipulate the American public. For example, you may recall when the towers went down, they showed footage of Palestinians allegedly cheering, and
yeah.
it turned out that footage was in fact from a holy day where they were celebrating, you know, martyrs
a week or two earlier.
Yeah. I mean, it's so outrageous how all this was done, and obviously it implies foreknowledge on the part of the government. You can't anticipate plugging that sort of evidence into the national TV network if you haven't arranged it in advance.
But with the exception of Fox, they covered up those dancing Israelis there, flew them back home with our taxpaying funds. Folks, stick with us. We'll be right back on Truth Hurts Radio.
Music. You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Sit back, relax, and enjoy a vacation to the beautiful Ozark Mountains. Howard Creek Resort is nestled conveniently between the cities of Bull Shoals and Mountain Home on Bull Shoals Lake in the natural state of Arkansas. Howard Creek Resort offers easy access to excellent fishing and water recreation of all types. The excitement of nearby Branson music shows and Silver Dollar City is accented perfectly by the many attractions located here in the heart of the Ozarks. Horseback riding, water skiing, scuba diving, hiking, caves, and rock climbing are just a few of the many activities that are available to do in our area. Howard Creek Resorts offers it all. Whether you're staying for the weekend or for a month, Howard Creek Resorts is the place to be, an excellent place to stay, and a valued traditional family vacation resort. Visit our website at www.howardcreek.com or call 1-877-253-7690. Come visit us for a lifetime of memories.
Americans who already realize our nation is in deep trouble need special edition hard copy literature to awaken the widest possible spectrum of people to the imminence of our nation's peril. The Artificially Sweetened Times informs people that the artificial sweetener aspartame is a hidden addiction killing people worldwide with a cluster of symptoms we now call Rumsfeld's disease. Find out who's responsible for unleashing this weapon of mass misery on the world and become part of the global movement to eliminate this neurotoxic drug from our food supply. The People's Income Tax Guide cites congressional records, Supreme Court decisions, and newspaper articles at the time to prove conclusively that wages were never intended to be taxed as income. A lot has happened in the world since 9/11. The report of the Citizens Commission on 9/11 disproves the government's explanation of September 11 through a careful analysis of the evidence. The Artificially Sweetened Times, the People's Income Tax Report, and the report of the Citizens Commission on 9/11 are priced for mass distribution. Sample copies are just $3. Call 208-255-2307 or go to idaho-observer.com.
Stay connected to what's happening at the Republic Broadcasting Network by visiting our website,
www.rbnlive.com.
At rbnlive.com, you'll stay up to date with our latest broadcast schedule, learn about upcoming events, read about our air personalities and the programs they host, take part in discussion forums, read the latest breaking news, and listen to RBN programs on your computer by connecting to our live broadcast stream. Plus, you can download previous RBN programs from the archive completely free of charge. That's right. Unlike other services, there is no charge to download programs from the RBN archive. Share them freely with others who are not yet listeners to the Republic Broadcasting Network and help spread the word. We're taking America back through the power of information. Stay connected to the Republic Broadcasting Network and our website, rbnlive.com.
You the finest false evidence since 1908.
All right, guys. Back here on Truth Hurts Radio, Professor Fetzer. Boy, this afternoon's flying away. Got another half hour or so here. Once again, anybody wants to call in, any questions that you have for Professor Fetzer, the number is 800-313-9443. Again, 800-313-9443. We were talking about, you know, the parallels with the forging of evidence with Kennedy's assassination, with 9/11. It's amazing. You keep seeing this. And again, it's the FBI's fingerprints all over this stuff over and over again.
It is very troubling, Charlie.
I was wondering what, you going to say something?
No, I just say it's very troubling. I mean, it's like the politicalization of the Department of Justice under the Bush administration. I mean, I remember when, as a young man, I visited Washington for the first time, and I walked by the Department of Justice, and I just thought to myself how wonderful it was that here we had a government that had a whole Department of Justice to look out for the rights of the people. And then, of course, as I became older, I became so disillusioned by discovering actually it operates as a subterfuge to represent the interests of the administration, not the rights of the people.
Oh, is it justice? I thought it was just us. That's how George would interpret that, just us.
I like that, Charlie.
Hey, you know, I was wondering with Tippett what you thought the motive might be there. Did he see something, perhaps, that he wasn't supposed to see that day, or...
The whole Tippit thing is one of the mysterious loose ends of the case, in my opinion. I don't know what could have been the deal there, but he was clearly sent off to that Oak Park area for the purpose, I think, of being killed so that they could blame it on Oswald. I think the whole thing was a setup, but why Tippit was selected is something I cannot answer.
Yeah, something very strange there. How about the Dave Ferry thing? He was the first or one of the most important key witnesses that would have been a witness in the Jim Garrison case.
Yeah, David Ferry's a real strange guy. Apparently he knew Lee Oswald when Lee had been in the Civilian Air Corps thing where Ferry was a pilot and they had become acquainted. He appears to have made a very odd trip the day of the assassination in order to, I believe, pilot, you know, some of the shooters out of the country, but it was all kind of aborted. You put a very good portrayal of this in Oliver Stone's film JFK, all about Ferry. He also was involved in these weird cancer research experiments involving mice. He was a very strange guy.
Yeah, to say the least. But it's interesting, in the book On the Trail of the Assassins, which of course was written by Jim Garrison, he pointed out that when he arrived on the scene, it's like the FBI or whatever left their calling card, or the CIA, whoever it was. He found an empty bottle of Proloid under the couch. And I don't even know if that's still in use, but back then Proloid was given to people who had underactive thyroids. It was, you know, designed to kick your thyroid into higher gear. But he had an overactive thyroid. And he found out that Proloid, given to people with overactive thyroids, can induce a hemorrhage. And, of course, that was listed as the cause of death. So it appears
that's
as though
very interesting. No, I don't think there's no doubt. I think that he was murdered, and as indeed were several others. Jim Garrison, who is a very cautious district attorney, by the way, I've spoken with persons who lived there at the time Garrison was in office, who said that he was so meticulous and thorough in his preparation that he virtually never lost a case. And they surmise that had it not been for the mysterious deaths of at least three key witnesses, that he probably would have prevailed again. But, of course, the government was orchestrating a vicious assault upon him as a matter of public relations, and also trying to subvert his investigation from within.
Well, I think they would,
of course, suggest that he was, in fact, on the right track, at least to a fringe of the assassination.
I think they would have killed him, except he was so much in the spotlight that they were, you know, probably hesitant to do that. But,
yeah, that's quite likely.
Anyway, we've got a couple more callers here waiting. We got Jeff in Vermont, up my way here in New England. How's it going, Jeff?
Good. How you guys doing?
Good.
Hey, welcome to the show, man.
Hey, Professor. I'm not going to get into it. I don't agree with your theory on 9/11 on the collapse of the World Trade Center 7 and 1 and 2, but I'll be that.
Yeah, I don't either. Buildings, they fall down all the time. They turn to dust and fall within 10 seconds. I saw one just the other day in Boston do that. It's crazy. I'm not going to go in those things again.
No, I believe I'm more of a Professor Jones analogy about what happened to the World Trade Center that day. Well, I'm not going to.
Oh, you're talking about how it felt.
Let me just give a partial response that I'm not convinced that thermite or thermate wasn't used. I simply don't believe it can be the complete explanation. And actually, if you read Steve carefully, he doesn't make that claim. He says, in combination with other explosives, he mentions RDX. There are chemical tags from the use of RDX, none of which have ever turned up. But my point is simply that the nature of the destruction of the buildings, the massiveness, the thoroughness, the pulverization, the rate at which the buildings were destroyed and so forth, plus many other features of the damage to the World Trade Center and so forth, provide a rather compelling case that thermite can't possibly be the whole explanation, and it looks as though what was involved here is some kind of high-tech weapon, something probably developed during the Star Wars research program, which has been actively investigated for nearly 40 years now.
Well, you know, to throw my two cents in, there's no question that thermite could not have been solely used, because thermite's not even an explosive.
That's right. It's a cutting charge. You're right.
So obviously there was something else used there that very powerful. I mean,
but
it pulverized.
Go ahead with your question. Let's take.
Yeah, sorry, Jeff.
Okay. That's fine. I'm used to getting interrupted, but I'm just joking. But when you guys go back to the dancing Israelis, and I think it's thing that's really not well researched is the money factor behind everything, and you can have all these theories about how the World Trade. We all know that the World Trade Centers weren't destroyed by the airplanes, and you guys can come up with as many theories as you want of how they came together. But
yeah.
With the stop option trading, which was a non-investigation, they said they were going to investigate. You had the dancing Israelis. You have Frank Loy. You have Mark Rich. You have Larry Silverstein, and you have this Israeli connection, and it seems like, and if you start talking about this stuff, you're going to instantly be labeled. And all it is it's a crime. These people have committed a crime, and we're just investigating you people.
Oh yeah, well, absolutely. All kinds of profiteering, and it's still going on with the phony wars.
Let me address a couple aspects of that. I take it, in fact, that the some of those put options were actually traced back to the CIA or officials of the CIA, and that the
Buzzy Cronger,
and that the the 9/11 Commission simply said that it didn't have any relationship to the events of 9/11, which is of course ignoring its own evidence. I mean, if it traces back to the CIA, that obviously implicates the CIA or some of its officials, and they oughtn't to have treated it that way. It was based on a predetermined conclusion as to who was going to be held responsible, that they could derive that inference. It wouldn't follow any other way. As far as the dancing Israelis are concerned, I think it's extremely important, and I talk about it frequently, where we have these five Israelis on the rooftop of a building across the Hudson River who were filming the destruction of the World Trade Center and celebrating as it took place. They would later depart in a van only to be arrested. They were actually incarcerated for 4 or 5 months. Until an assistant to the Attorney General by the name of Michael Chertoff directed that they be released. Chertoff, of course, today is our head of Homeland Security. He has joint U.S.-Israeli
citizenship.
And, how we can put people, Charlie, with this kind of obvious conflict of interest in such sensitive positions is astounding
to me. Well, I mean, look
at
Bush hired Yevgeny Primakov to work as an advisor for Homeland Security. The former KGB chief, he also hired Marcus Wolf, who was the head of the East German Stasi. So he
these guys went back to Israel, and then three of them appeared on television and explained that they were there to document the destruction of the World Trade Center. But, of course, they couldn't have been there for that purpose unless they had prior knowledge. We have, several stories about the dancing Israelis and even the footage of their interview on Israeli television on 911scholars.org. If you scroll to the foreign perspective section, you will find quite a lot about this. I think it's very, very important and very damning. In fact, they were part of a rather large group of around 100 so-called Israeli art students who in small groups appear to have been tracking the different alleged hijackers, no doubt to make sure where they were, and that they were alive and well in relation to their being used as patsies in relation to 9/11.
Right. That static was brought to you by Homeland Security. We just had some nasty static. Anyway, we have another caller. I guess Jeff had dropped off. We got Woody in Pennsylvania. Are you there, Woody?
Yes, sir. I'd like to ask you two guys, have you ever seen JFK 2?
Yes.
I haven't myself, no.
Well, yeah, it's a lot of evidence showing a George Bush connection to different aspects of the assassination.
Oh, I did see that. That's right. Yes, yes, yes. That's an excellent excellent documentary.
Yeah, that was put out by a high school teacher in Los Angeles. And I thought
right.
He did an awful good job on it.
Well, it's very interesting. I mean, we have lots of indications that Bush was working for the CIA far before he became the director, even though at the time it was claimed that he was the first civilian to have been made the head of that agency. For example, the code name for the Bay of Pigs invasion was Operation Zapata. That just happened to be the name of the Bush family oil drilling operation. I believe
if
it had been a success, he would have had the concession to drill oil all around the Caribbean basin. Two of the ships were rechristened right before the invasion. One was renamed Houston. The other was renamed Barbara. This is something he did when he was a pilot in World War II. He would name his aircraft after his wife. So
right.
We have this and other indications. I discovered a photograph, so far as I know, no one had ever noticed before, in front of the book depository the afternoon of the assassination, where you see this tall, lanky fellow with a characteristic stance, hands in his pocket, head tilted forward, which, if it isn't George Herbert Walker Bush, must be his twin brother, Skippy. Bush, of course, claims he can't remember where he was the day of the assassination, but there we have photographic evidence that, in fact, he was in Dallas.
Sure. You know, this is interesting, too. I found this out recently. Back in the 50s, you know, we went in twice into Guatemala. It turns out, with hindsight, that the whole reason for going in there was because of United Fruit. They wanted to protect their profits. Well, I think it was in 1970. That was a CIA operation, of course, both of those times. In 1970, George Bush Sr. actually purchased United Fruit.
Really?
Yeah, very interesting.
That's very interesting.
His name pops up all over the place. Anyway, did you have any more points or questions there, Woody?
No, you guys are in something that I spent a lot of time looking into and trying to get people to be aware of it.
Yeah, that's excellent. That's excellent. You raise a good question. I'm glad you called.
Thank you.
Yeah, keep hitting them. It's very hard sometimes to wake certain people up. They're just stuck in certain mindset and short of a lobotomy. I tell you, it's incredible. People, the evidence of this stuff is absolutely undeniable and overwhelming. I think, really, sometimes it comes down to people just not wanting to admit what's going on, you know?
Well, there's a psychological phenomenon, Charlie, known as cognitive dissonance. It's like when a woman discovers evidence that her husband's been molesting their daughter. It's so traumatizing, so threatening to her core values and even her sense of who she is that she may suppress the information. I mean, we get all these court cases of how, you know, eventually it comes to light and the mother is condemned for not having exposed it, and yet she was in this traumatic state. A lot of psychologists conjecture that that's happening with the population of the United States. Certainly,
yeah.
An easy generalization to infer that a lot of Americans are similarly traumatized by the very idea that their government would kill them instead of take care of them.
Yeah, and so they cower in the corner, and that's how they get away with what they're doing. We get another actually two more callers. We'll go to David in Alabama first. You there, Dave?
Yes. How you doing?
This is how's it going?
Good program. Not only do we need to tie the 9/11 and Kennedy assassination, but what about Lincoln? Abraham Lincoln, 50 years at the book, 50 years in the Church of Rome by Charles Chinequin. I know a lot of people don't have that book, but you can Google that book. And from
talked about that yesterday. I don't know if you heard the show yesterday. We had
it yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
It was
yeah.
The same group that they did that. The guy that shot him eventually went back to the Rome from where he came from. I would pretty much responsibility for that assassination.
Well, you know, the central bankers, the international financiers who created the central bank here, that had a lot to do with Lincoln's assassination. In fact, you can go through all the presidents that have been assassinated, and you can see that they were withstanding the setup of a central bank here.
That's pretty much my comment. It's a good show, and it needs to be addressed on a regular basis. That's good you're doing it. Don't let it die down.
All right, well, thanks, Dave. Appreciate your call.
All right.
I'll just say that my own research, Charlie, doesn't substantiate the thesis of either Israeli involvement or Catholic involvement in either, you know, in so far as I know, in either the assassination of Abraham Lincoln or, of course, in relation to Israel, JFK. So.
Right. Well, I always just point out the money factor, you know. The international financiers who had been pushing for a central bank here, of course, they had somewhat of a central bank here. Initially, they had the first bank of the United States, second bank of the United States. Didn't quite fly, though. And they were trying under Lincoln to get another one established. And he refused, you know. And then later, under Garfield, they were trying it again. He refused. McKinley, he refused. We all know what happened to those two after, you know, Lincoln. And so, you know, Kennedy, again, he tried to override the Federal Reserve. And you were just talking about, you know, printing the greenbacks. And, you know, it wasn't the only reason, but I'm sure that was a major factor because it's the Federal Reserve that's given them the elites the stranglehold on this country, you know.
Yes.
So that's one connection I definitely make. Anyway, we got one more caller here waiting on the line. We got Tony, our mutual buddy there. Tony in New York. What's going on, Tony?
What's up, Charlie? What's up?
What do you think, Tony?
What's up, brother?
How are you doing, buddy?
It's all a coincidence, you know. These are all coincidences. Yeah. They're all coincidences.
Like your phone call. Your phone call's another coincidence.
Yeah, it's all a coincidence. there's a list of people that died around Bush, mysteriously, and Clinton mysteriously, over the years. But that's just a coincidence. All this stuff is a coincidence. I mean, that's what everybody wants to think. Oh, you try to show them facts and figures and dates. People were places they shouldn't have been, but they were there. And
it's funny, they laugh at us like we're so crazy and so paranoid, but what they're offering is actually... Hey, did you hear about that article about Professor Fetzer? A bunch of psychologists came out just this past week and said that the official 9/11 story is, quote, crazy, and that you'd have to be crazy to believe it. It listed a whole slew of them, several dozen, from around the country who agreed
to
this.
Charlie, that's very big. Could you send me a link to that? I'd like to look at that. That slipped by me. I must have been involved in some project that took me away from, what was going on. That's really
big. Yeah, I tell you what, email me at truthhurtsradio@aol.com, and I'll reply, I'll send that to you. H-E-R-T-Z,
okay.
Truth Hurts Radio. Stick with us, folks. We'll be right back.
Businesses and their employees are facing constant increases in group medical insurance premiums. Employees are shouldering more of the burden themselves. Core Documents, the nation's primary source for affordable medical plan documents, has the answer. A health reimbursement arrangement, or HRA. Business owners, managers, find out now how your company can utilize a much higher deductible health insurance policy and establish an HRA to fund low deductibles for your employees. And employees, tell the boss to visit coredocuments.com now. This new HRA plan can save you thousands of dollars.
Employers all over the country are discovering how to roll back insurance costs using Core Documents' HRA concept. Core Documents is the nation's primary source for affordable plan documents required by the IRS and Department of Labor for Section 125 and HRA plans. Use your insurance agent and let Core Documents help you with plan design. Do a Google search for Core Documents or see us at coredocuments.com. That's Core, C-O-R-E, documents, plural, .com.
How are you preparing ahead for the events in the future? In the near future, we know there will be those of us that will not be able to buy or sell. Stoves & More wants to help give you the freedom from the systems of the world and from skyrocketing fuel prices. Stoves & More is a dealer for all Amish-built wood cook stoves that will give you an independence you need to cook and bake your food, dry fruits and vegetables, heat your whole house water system, and heat your home. These state-of-the-art cook stoves are nothing like Grandma's old stoves. They have large, airtight, efficient fireboxes that give you an all-night burn, easily heating up to 2,000 square feet. Whether or not you're off the grid, we have products for you from stoves to Staber washers and 12 and 24 volt refrigeration. At Stoves & More, we have the perfect products to complete your preparations. To the first 10 people who purchase a stove, we'll send a free copy of our newly released DVD, Getting Started with Wood Cook Stoves. Stoves & More offers the best selection at the lowest prices on the web, so visit us at www.stovesandmoreonline.com. That website again, stovesandmoreonline.com.
Hi, Steve Shank, Fearless Task Force. The J. Michael Stevens Group is shipping a lot of storable food. It's smart that you're getting going at your food supplies. 1 week after the report came out that the world had eaten more food than it produced last year, the country turned into a deep freeze, wiping out a huge part of the new crop. An example? In 24 hours, Clementine oranges doubled in price. If you intend to start or finish your supply, call immediately. When you call, tell them how many adults and how many years of food you need. When there are shortages, missing items will be substituted, maintaining the quantity of food necessary. Money is not the problem. Availability is. Be careful. When food supplies get short, with no future, many retailers ship real trash to supply you. For safe food you can trust, call 800-409-5633. On the web, efoodsdirect.com. 800-409-5633.
Back. Just a quick reminder, we're still doing the pledge drive here at RBN, so you can call in with your donations, 800-724-2719, 800-724-2719. Professor Fetzer, if you just email me once again, truthhurtsradio@aol.com, I got the page right up here. I was just looking through it. It's incredible. This is Professor...
If you check your email, it should already be there.
Oh, okay. After the show, I'll send it right off. Professor of Psychology, Oxford University. I mean, these are major, major. Oh, I love it. This is great stuff. We got one more caller here. Got time for one last caller. Richard from Texas. You with us, Richard?
Yes, I just wanted to ask the professor about a quick story I saw on the History Channel about this brilliant biologist female who was training with Oswald to go to Cuba and with some poison that they were working on, and they were going to kill Castro with it. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah. This is a woman who claims to have had a love affair with Lee Oswald in New Orleans that they met at a post office. And a segment of The Men Who Killed Kennedy, there were three new segments that were produced. Originally, Nigel Turner, the British director, had put together a five-part Men Who Killed Kennedy. Then he added a sixth segment. And he would later put together three new segments. One was entitled The Smoking Guns, about the evidence, including the more than 15 indications of Secret Service complicity in setting him up. The second, the love affair, or the relationship with a woman named Judith Baker.
Oh, we're getting some background noise here. Oh, okay, there we go.
A woman named Judith Baker, who is the party you're identifying. And the third was entitled The Guilty Men, which was fingering Lyndon Johnson as the key player in the bringing about the assassination. Now, these segments are impossible or virtually impossible to get these days because a big outburst of opposition to the very idea that Lyndon Johnson could have been involved came from Jack Valenti, for example, his former aide, Lady Bird, and others. They even concocted a phony scheme of having three historians, none of whom knew anything about the assassination, on to claim that it was an absurd idea. One of them turned out to be a guy who was into the history of sociology, urban sociology. Another was a constitutional, history of the Constitution guy. And the third was Robert Dalek, who's a legitimate historian at JFK, but who knows nothing about the assassination. So the whole thing was a charade. Now, the part you're talking about with Judith Baker is very complicated, and I'm not confident which end is up here. She claimed they had this relationship. They did this research together. And so on. I actually did begin investigating her in relation to her background because she claimed to have quite a large variety of academic degrees, including master's degrees in several fields, and was working on a PhD. And to the extent to which I was able to track it down, what she had said about herself appeared to be true. But the whole story seems to me so very far-fetched that I've had a very difficult time taking it seriously. Now, I'm not saying that her claims are false. I'm just saying I have had a difficult time taking it seriously, and I'm not in the position to vouch for or verify what she has claimed.
Yeah, that's a tricky one. Thanks, Richard, for your call. I had one other question myself. We didn't really touch too much on it, but I was curious to get your opinion on the recently released E. Howard Hunt tape.
Yes.
What thought of that?
I think what Howard Hunt has to say is right for that part of the scheme of things. I mean, he can't account for how the role of the military here, for example, or how the autopsy x-rays were altered or a brain was substituted or the limousine was sent back and all that sort of
right.
thing. But when he fingers persons like David Attlee Phillips or William Harvey or Frank Sturgis or David Sanchez Morales, he's absolutely on the right track. And further evidence confirming that comes from another source. A former United States Army officer was assigned to the CIA and worked at J.M. Wave at that period of time and knew many of these players, a guy named Bradley Ayers, who's published a book entitled The Zenith Secret. I think those who want to follow up on this might want to read that book. It's a gripping read from beginning to end and offers a lot of corroboration for what E. Howard Hunt had to say.
Right. Okay, thanks, James, Professor James Fetzer, for coming on. And, folks, we'll see you on Monday. Have a good weekend.
It's true. Gold and silver have been a source of true wealth for years. In fact, people around